Hey, Deep Fried fans. Thanks for all of the recent birthday wishes. Enrique Ramirez, one of our loyal listeners, left me a sweet birthday wish and explained that in Puerto Rico, they eat something called deep fried plantains. Plantains are like bananas, but firmer and lower in sugar content. They're considered a staple food in certain regions, much like potatoes in the United States. This is Ellie Mae. I'm announcing show number 28, recorded at the CodeMash Conference in January 2009 at the Kalahari Resort in Sandusky, Ohio. In this episode, Keith and Woody sit down with John Stockton and discuss networking with Silverlight. John is one of the authors of Silverlight 2 in Action and has been building major web applications since the late 90s. He has used technologies such as ASP, ASP.NET, HTML, DHTML, AJAX, XML, and many others. His clients have been in numerous industries including government and politics, chemical, telecommunications, finance, healthcare, and many others. Currently, John is focused on Silverlight and is loving every minute of it. His position as an IRA developer at Ascentium allows him to use this amazing technology for large clients and push the envelope on what can be accomplished. Okay, Deep Fried fans, grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Jumpology.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Deep Fried Bites. What's up, Mr. Woodster?
How you doing, Keith?
Man, I'm kind of tired, actually.
Yeah, you know, it's been a long couple days. Fun, exciting here at CodeMash in Sandusky, Ohio. We're just plugging along.
Trying to get you guys some good shows and topics. We got a big snowstorm brewing outside, so
yep.
Supposed to get like a foot of snow or something like that for this evening.
It's going to be fun.
Hey, folks, we're sitting down today with John Stockton, who is a Silverlight guru, and we're going to talk about some stuff there. But before we do, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks, John, for coming on. And so how's CodeMash? How's the CodeMash experience for a Seattle person?
Oh, it's been great. Having just not been in Seattle long, it's you know, all the people I know and everyone here, so that's great. And the snow, I haven't completely gotten unused to it yet, so yeah, I'll survive.
Now, to tell everybody that, in case people don't really know who you are and don't read your blog and stuff, tell people how you got from, like you said that you know everybody from here, but and you got to Seattle. So kind of give us that little story there.
Sure. Well, just like a lot of programmers, career programmers, I, you know, have been kind of moving from job to job for a long time, as we tend to do. And, you know, just kind of stagnated for a while, as web developers or all developers tend to do. And so finally, I'm just like, okay, I've got to figure out what do I want to do when I grow up? You know, the eternal programmer question. And so with a lot of hard work, finally figured it out. And basically, it's like, I do love programming. I do love developing. And just need to find where in that do I like. And having always been a web developer and wanted to do more than HTML and CSS and stuff would allow me to do, when I saw Silverlight coming along, it's like, okay, this is it. This is the thing I've been waiting for the last decade. So I just figured out, okay, I want to do this, and I want to do this full time, and I want to do it at a good company with good colleagues and working for good clients and someplace big enough that I can do it full time. So I looked around and said, okay, I'm not going to find that here. By here, I mean, I lived in Akron, Ohio, so worked in the Cleveland, Akron area. And I'm like, okay, that job doesn't exist here. I mean, it just doesn't exist, and it's not going to for a long time. So I just kind of spent a while looking around, saying, okay, who is doing this? Especially when, I mean, Silverlight 2 was just beta, or I don't even think it was beta yet when I started this search. So I'm like, okay, who is already using Silverlight? So at that point, there were, you know, maybe a handful of companies in the country. I mean, maybe. So I found, okay, who fits all the criteria I'm looking for? And it was Ascentium. That's the only company I could find that really fit the culture and the technology and everything else I was looking for. So I'm like, okay, how can I... So after I found that, then I'm like, okay, how can I convince a company in Seattle, Washington to fly me out there or to move me and my family all the way out there from the Midwest? So I'm like, well, I have to become an expert. Well, and expert is a term I don't really like because nobody can know all of it. But but basically make myself marketable. And so I learned everything I could about it. And and started writing and building and spending all my time doing it and getting out in the community and got a book deal doing it. One chapter of a book, but still I like to consider I helped.
At least make your mama proud.
Exactly. And then it worked. I made it out there. They loved me, and I've been out there ever since.
That's cool. You sort of found your passion, and you sort of went out and did your own thing and built your own little Silverlight empire, so to speak, huh?
You could say that.
Yeah, nice. I didn't know you did the chapter in a book. So which book was that?
Silverlight 2 in Action. Chad Campbell was lead author on it. And I did a chapter on networking in Silverlight, so connecting to services and that kind of thing. And it's from Manning Publications and just came out this last fall in October.
How's it doing?
It's doing pretty good. As far as Silverlight books go right now, I don't know if it's number one, because it's hard to get real numbers, but it's doing really well. It's had almost only positive reviews. So
it's kind of funny that you bring up the whole networking with Silverlight. That's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about today, because that's sort of what you talked on here. And I'm a big WCF guy, and you were talking about WCF in your talk that you gave at CodeMash here. So let's just kind of hound it up a little bit. And
okay.
Go for it. So it's kind of funny. One of the other speakers here, Corey Haynes, called me, a week or so ago or 2 weeks ago, and was like, hey, I need somebody that knows WCF with Silverlight. And I said, well, I know WCF, and all I know is that it uses one binding out of it, which is the basic binding, right? And he said, really? They said, well, we want to use the TCP binding. I'm like, no, you got to use the basic binding. That's my extent knowledge of Silverlight and WCF, right? So is there anything else that somebody should know trying to do that with Silverlight and WCF besides just basic?
Well, yeah. For WCF, actually, that's the biggest one. No WS star, no SOAP 1.1, or nothing beyond SOAP 1.1. But yeah, basic HTTP binding is the big restriction. And actually, the easiest way to do that with Silverlight, though, is if you have the Silverlight tools for Visual Studio installed, you actually get a WCF template called Silverlight-enabled WCF template. So it sets that stuff up for you. So then you can just worry about your code and not worry about the configuration. It makes it pretty nice.
Is there anything in the Silverlight, is there anything you have to do special, any type of attributes on the service that you have to put on there, anything, or is it?
No, just the standard, I'm not a WCF expert, but
okay.
from the what I've set up, just the standard service contracts and data members and those kinds of things, it works.
Okay, so can kind of go through what you spoke on here and kind of give us the high level, then we'll kind of dig into it then.
Okay, so the presentation was on networking and communications in Silverlight. So what I did is I talked about the different service types you can connect to, and then the data types that you can consume. Those were the two biggest topics that I talked about, but I really like to keep my presentation to where a lot of it is just answering questions, because for something like communications in Silverlight, for audiences today, most of the time they're not going to get as much out of a code example as they are from just getting their questions answered. Seeing me type, proxy.service-reference or whatever isn't going to help anyone, but answering their question on what do you do with JSON when you get it back from a REST API, that actually helps someone. So that's the way I kind of run through my presentations, and people seem to like it. So
cool. So what is the story, or are there any differences if you're consuming REST and JSON and the WCF? Do you actually treat it differently in the code behinds, or is it sort of there's a abstraction on top of it or something?
Yes, you do treat it differently, at least at the beginning layer. When you're first making the call, yeah, it absolutely depends on what type of service you're calling. If you're calling WCF, then you make a service reference, just like, or very similar. If you're familiar with ASP.NET web references, it's created almost identically. So the WSDL's consumed by Visual Studio and makes your proxy classes and everything. So you have full IntelliSense support on the different methods and classes and everything. So when you're calling those, it's incredibly simple.
Now, on that, I do know that everything you do is supposed to be asynchronous in Silverlight, right?
Yes.
So you have to go in, if you're going to do the service reference, you're going to have to go in and say, make this async whenever you add the service reference?
No, because okay. It is async by default. So when you make the reference, you don't make it asynchronous. But when you call it asynchronously. And with Silverlight, since everything is done asynchronously anyway, you don't have to do any special setup as you have in some previous languages or platforms. So basically what you do is after you've got your proxy created, you know, by Visual Studio, when you're coding it, you first wire an event to the callback. So let's say you have a method named on your WCF service named like get names. What you do is you wire a handler to the whatever your proxy name is dot get names completed to that event. So, you know, especially in Visual Studio, it's incredibly simple, you know, plus equal tab tab, it makes your stub for you. And then you call get names async. You know, proxy name dot get names async. And that's it. That's all you do. And then you go to the return method that it's just stubbed out for you, and then handle the data when it comes back. And if it, in the case of a service reference like that, then your return is whatever the return type is of that method.
So that's just like standard. If you're in a smart client, you're typically going to do asynchronous calls because you don't want to, you know, block the threads and stuff on the thing. Same thing with Silverlight. So that's sounds like it's pretty simple. What about if you're calling like a REST? Let's say you're going to build a Silverlight UI for Twitter, you know, something like that.
That's different. And because of that, since you don't get the proxy created for you and stuff, when you're calling a RESTful service, you use different methods to connect to it. So with WCF, you use your service reference. To connect to a RESTful service, you can use, you have a couple options. Web client is great because that's the way to, especially if you're doing mostly just gets, if you just get returning data, that's the simplest, easiest. You don't have to worry about anything. You know, a couple lines of code, and you can call your RESTful API and get your data back as either XML or JSON, or whatever else if you want to parse it yourself. But if you're doing more than that, if you're doing posting data to the API as well, then typically you'll have to use an HTTP web request, which is a lot more in depth. It allows you a lot more customization of the headers going out. You can change the HTTP verb going out and that kind of thing. So each step you go down this chain, it gets harder. I mean, a little more developer work has to be done, but you can still do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's sound okay. So it sounds like that it's just, you know, REST is just plain old XML, so you're going to have to just deal with the way that you normally would in the .NET framework. So
exactly. Well, and when you get the data back, REST returns either XML or JSON, and you right. actually get at least three ways to handle XML, so which is kind of more than most people are expecting. You get your XML reader, you know, so you can, you know, walk through it and step through it like people who are masochists like to do. Or you can use link to XML, the new way that people who are only masochists for a little while they're learning it, can learn. Or you can also use a serializer, an XML serializer, to just, as soon as you get it in, just convert it into your strongly typed object that you already know and just deal with it that
That's
way.
That's probably what I would do.
Yeah.
I like IntelliSense.
Yes, I agree. and then with JSON, it's a very similar story, actually. You have the JSON object, which, why they call it the JSON object instead of link to JSON, I don't know, because that's what it does. But then you also have a serializer for that one as well. And that one, if anyone out there is actually trying to use that, don't look up JSON serializer, because that's not what it's called. It's the data contract JSON serializer, I believe. One of the longest names in the .NET framework, I believe.
nice.
Yeah.
So, John, I've done a lot of talks on Astoria in the past, and I know Astoria, high levels, is a REST, is a RESTful API on top of WCF, but it is slightly different than some other REST vehicles. So what's your perception of Astoria and Silverlight?
I believe Silverlight today, today Silverlight would use it as just any other RESTful API. You do your gets, you do your posts, and you could use it just like you would call it from JavaScript and Ajax and that kind of thing, or some other application. But there's some interesting stuff that appears to be on the way for Silverlight as well. Back at PDC, a project manager called Jamie Cool, he did a presentation where he outlined some future pieces coming in Silverlight. Now, they're not telling us if they're all going to make them in, of course, and they're not telling us when they're going to come. You know, I think the current ship date is future. But when this actually comes, they can do some Astoria-like things where you can Well, what he demoed is you can set up like business logic classes. You know, let's say you used Entity Framework to create some class library or whatever, and then you create a business logic class as opposed to just a standard.cs, and then you can actually define part of it in your ASP.NET app and part of it in your Silverlight app, and the plumbing is all done for you. All your service calls and everything, you don't have to worry about any of it. You don't as a developer, I mean, you know when it's calling data and stuff, but you aren't worried about the plumbing. You're not making your asynchronous calls and stuff. It's doing that for you.
So it's kind of like they're doing the ORM type of thing between Silverlight and ASP.NET?
It appears to be something like that. There was very little information. I mean, it was, 10 minutes of a presentation that was out there. But yeah, it definitely looked like they're sharing the classes between the different platforms and then sharing the data between them and some other cool stuff like that. It looks like it's on the way.
That sounds very cool. We'll have to keep our eyes open for more stuff about that.
Yeah, I can say being a Silverlight developer, I can't wait for some of that to actually be in production.
So what's the coolest thing you've built in Silverlight so far, John?
Let's see. Coolest thing that's actually out there. With the company I work for right now, most of the apps we end up building are, it's a digital marketing agency, or experience agency, as we say it sometimes. Or at least half of the company is where I work. And so most of the stuff we do is, simple marketing type stuff. So hero bars and navigations and, little content accordions and things like that. But every now and then we get to work on some cooler, bigger stuff that really makes us happy. I actually just got done working on a piece where I can't really tell you everything about it because it's not live yet, but it allows you to select different, like, let's say, patterns, and you can upload pictures into it and insert your selected picture into another thing and then upload that to a server and it do some more work for you. And the whole interface for it is very fluid. It's very easy to use. It's very intuitive. I mean, it's the kind of thing your mother-in-law would know how to use without instructions.
And it's not out yet.
It's not out yet. But it
drop date is going to be when, do you think?
Well, that one, it's a weird kind of
future,
thing.
Future, probably.
Yeah, sometime in the future. But we hope, actually. It's the kind of thing, we built it for a client, and they might use it, but they might not. So it's, but they paid for it, so that makes us happy. But if you do, it might be live within the next few months.
Okay. Now, give us some best practices with Silverlight. Give us some of, give us some 300-400 level stuff if you have anything like that.
Some stuff in that area is, well, with Silverlight being so young, it's really hard to come up with some good best practices, because right now there's a lot of, I wouldn't call it conflict, but a lot of discussion on what is the right way. Should you use what kind of framework should you use? Should you go with the straight, for lack of a better term, web forms style, you have your page and you have your code behind, or, so you have a XAML file and a .cs file and they're tied to each other and they, flow through the system like that. So kind of a web form style thing, which is kind of the out-of-the-box Silverlight. Or there's other people doing like MVC type patterns in it, or I'm not even going to get all these patterns right because I'm not a really pattern guy, but there's MVVP and MVMVC and I mean all these different patterns that people are throwing out there, and there doesn't seem to be much consensus yet on what pattern works for Silverlight. There's still a lot of work ongoing in that area though, so hopefully as the maturity of Silverlight gets a little higher, some of that will become clearer. In that respect, there's a few, I don't know if I'd call it best practices, but tips are like global data. You're depending on what platform you come from, getting to data and statefulness and stuff like that, you're used to one of two things typically. If you're a desktop developer, you're used to, state being just everything. It's all around you. You don't even think about it. It's just there. If you're a web developer, on the other hand, you're constantly aware of state because you don't have it. If you have some sort of state, you're either managing it yourself at a very precise level, or you're allowing, session to do it for you on the server or something like that. But it's very statelessness. I might have just coined a new word there, but, With Silverlight, it's this weird kind of in-between area. So especially for web developers getting into Silverlight, which is, I would say, most people getting into Silverlight today, it takes a while to figure that out, because it's like you code up your object, your user control or whatever, and you follow it through the system, and you've added some properties to it, and then, you know, you, the first time you go to wire up an event on it, you're like, well, how do I get back to the data related to this class? And where, but it's like you're a desktop programmer, because it's there, because it has state. But, you know, from the web perspective, you're what you're thinking is, I have to relate this back to the data store, not realizing at first that it is its own data store at that point. So that's kind of a mindset change that you really have to. It takes a few days of staring at the screen, wondering how the heck it's going to work before it sinks in, before it really clicks in your head.
You know, me liking, you know, doing desktop programming, I don't even think about it, like, just like you said. And that's what I would, if I built something, I would actually say, well, I'm going to probably use Silverlight because I get the same thing that I had on the desktop.
Right. Right. But then from your perspective, then there's also issues that you have web developers have always been aware of. Like, you can't just make a connection to the database. The database isn't there. The database is on some server in Kentucky or whatever. I mean, it's somewhere that you just don't have access to, which is why you need services. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Hey, John. So how well, I'm just kind of digging into Silverlight right now, but so something just popped in my head. How well does Silverlight interact with the DOM in the browser?
Wonderfully. Silverlight has complete access to the entire DOM. So you can manipulate the DOM. You can call existing JavaScript classes. You can even write JavaScript classes that will come talk to your Silverlight methods or objects, as long as you mark them as scriptable. So, yeah, you have full in and out access from Silverlight to the DOM.
Can you use JavaScript libraries like jQuery? Do those interact well with Silverlight?
Sure. Anything you can call from JavaScript, you can call from Silverlight. So yeah, you can. In fact, I would say that's an area that people new to Silverlight should probably pay a lot of attention to, because most of the time when we're adding these applications to a page, that's exactly what we're doing. Most of the time, for most Silverlight developers out there, you're not going to be building a greenfield application. You're going to be adding a piece of Silverlight to an existing site where you probably are already using JavaScript throughout your app. So instead of recreating that functionality, you might as well hook it into your app so you're using what's there. Replace what you need to, but use what you've already built.
You know, I had somebody tell me, they said, with Silverlight 2.0, I'm not writing JavaScript anymore. It's like they're doing everything managed now in C#. So are you, besides the example that you just gave, if you're doing the whole green, an entire app, you know, in one whole big page, right, you would do that pretty much all over? Or are there any places where you would still do some JavaScript because it's the right tool for the job?
For the times I've done that, I have been able to get away without writing any JavaScript at all. Even when I need to modify the DOM, I'll do it through Silverlight. So I may be calling built-in JavaScript methods or accessing DOM properties that you would typically do through JavaScript, but I would do it through managed code.
Okay, so it's kind of the same story then. You'd pretty much do it through managed code if you're building that whole thing from scratch kind of app then, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And actually, when you have that knowledge of how Silverlight interacts with the DOM, you can actually do some really neat, tricky things with it.
Like what?
Like one thing that actually is a question that some people think you can't even solve, but actually there's a really nifty way to do it, and that is two separate Silverlight applications in one page talking to each other. Because Silverlight doesn't have access to itself. It doesn't have access to anything, but it has access to the DOM. So both Silverlight applications have access to the DOM. Mm-hmm. So you can use the DOM to go from one app to the other. So then the next thought people have once they figured that out is, well, okay, so I can only pass, you know, strings back and forth or something. Well, sure, but if you take a managed object and serialize it to XML, well, that's a string. So you can serialize these objects to XML. You can mark a method scriptable on one application, call that one from the other through the DOM without ever actually touching the DOM, and pass these managed objects from one to the other and then rehydrate it on the other side.
Can you do that with JavaScript as well?
Sure, but why would you want to?
Well, Good point, I guess. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But actually, if you have JSON, for instance, like back to the brownfield application where you're inserting Silverlight into it, if you've got JSON objects, you're already passing back and forth. There are JSON deserializers in Silverlight as well. So you can be passing those JSON objects back and forth in your JavaScript and then grab them from your Silverlight and convert them into managed objects as well that way.
John, on the show, we like to do a little segment where we call Rusty Washers and Shiny Pennies. Here we go. Okay, folks, for those that don't know about Rusty Washers and Shiny Pennies here on Deep Fried Bites, if you ever watched a demo and it was all shiny and pretty, and then you went home and tried to do it yourself, and then it didn't work, it turned into a rusty washer, right, Woody?
Yeah, and you swore up and down that whoever did that demo...
There was magic behind the scenes.
Didn't know what they were doing, or you kind of pushed that demo beyond what they were trying to do, and you found the hair. I was called the hairballs laying around it.
So whenever you were learning Silverlight, Johnny, what's some rusty washers you kind of stumbled across?
One of the big ones, and actually the story's a little better in that now, but especially back in the beta days, REST APIs, calling REST. Calling REST is wonderful. It's really simple. It's really so totally easy to do when all you're doing is gets. As soon as you start trying to post data to RESTful APIs, it all kind of falls apart. So that's kind of the flip side of that one. I mean, it's like, yeah, that's actually most of the demos I do when I'm calling REST. I do gets because, you know, two lines of code and you get your data and it looks great. I hope nobody asks me to demo doing a post because it's not simple. It's not easy. It's not
that
fun.
That was all the things I kept away from in my Astoria talks were the puts and then the deletes and the updates, those other HTTP verbs that no one kind of thinks about.
Exactly. Especially when you get to puts and deletes, because Silverlight only supports natively gets and posts, because that's all the browser does. So if you want to do an update or a put, then you have to hack the HTTP stream going out or whatever. Typically, the APIs will have a way for you to do that, but it's just more overhead and not very fun to do.
Surely somebody has written, that's pretty easy to encapsulate, though, in object-oriented programming. Surely nobody has written like this sort of RESTful API to help you with that?
Well, what you have to also remember is a web server like IS7 doesn't have certain verbs turned on by default.
That is
so
true.
So deletes isn't turned on by default in IS7. So is puts are, but in what's the there's two of the verbs. So
I think it's put and delete aren't on by default, but post and get are.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's two verbs that you have to have your admin or your IT person turn on within IS7. And I think Apache,
I think it's similar.
I think it's similar with Apache.
Yeah.
It's a security issue.
Could you turn that on, though, with the web.config file now with IS7?
No.
No,
it's not a remote. You can't do that remotely. You have to do that. That's a setting inside IS7, inside the tool.
I thought they moved that stuff to the config file, though, for us in 7.
No. Nope.
No? Not that part?
I don't think so. I think
remember they did the whole all the IS6 metadata. You had to go get your admins to do it. I thought they changed that in 7, where you can just put stuff how you want your server configured in the config file.
Well, you still have to have the person who's in charge of your web server turn it on. Now, if that's through the config file of the web server, or if it's through some UI.
I thought it was the config of your application, but
it has nothing to do with the application. Okay. It has to do with the instance of your IS7.
Well, if you're
going
to deploy it, you're going to be able to handle that. That's easy. I'm just saying like that. I think there should be an encapsulational API that would be written. I mean, we wrote one for our internal framework to do gets and posts, and it's asynchronous and it's one or two lines of code to do a post or a get. I mean, you can wrap it, you know.
And that's possible that people have done some stuff like that. I haven't seen it, but honestly, I try to stay away from REST whenever I can because WCF is a lot more fun to play with.
Yeah, but if you're building one of those, like somebody built this, Silverlight Twitter, somebody built that Silverlight Twitter app, and I was playing with it for about 5 or 10 minutes. You know, the UI was kind of different because it pulled all of the tweets and like these roles and stuff. And it's kind of, you know, interesting. I kind of wanted to see what it was doing because we're doing that whole witty Twitter project and WPF, right. You know, and stuff. So I want to kind of see what they did for the UI and things. They're probably going to wind up. I like to take the this is off topic, but I like to take the tweet deck and make it sort of Dinuiti because I really like tweet deck a lot.
Well, actually, the discussion of IIS 7 a second ago brought up another Silverlight tip I have for people.
Okay,
well, go ahead. That isn't so much for IIS 7, but everything before IIS 7. And that's typically, you know, you've built your Silverlight app and you run it in your desktop and it works great. And you might play with it on a staging server and it works great. And you push it to production and you just get a white box on the screen. And the reason is, at least the first time you do it, because IIS 6 has no idea what his app file is. It's never heard this. .xap, what's that? I don't know what that is. MIME type application Silverlight, what's that? I don't know what that is. So it just returns nothing. So you have to add the file type to IIS so that it knows that, okay, if someone's asking for a MIME type of application / Silverlight and it's a .zap file, okay, well, yeah, I know what that is, and here you can have it. But by default, IIS just will not return it.
So that's IIS 6.
That's IIS 6. And I believe some other web servers, I think Apache may have a similar issue as well. But IIS 7, they built in zap support for that one. So you're okay with 7. But prior to that, you have to enable the file type on IIS.
So what browsers work really well with Silverlight?
It's probably a shorter list of what doesn't.
Okay.
I mean, all the major ones work. You've got IE, Firefox on both Mac and Windows, Safari on Mac. I think Safari on Windows, at least it used to have issues. I'm not sure if it still does, but who uses Safari on Windows? Let's see, Chrome, actually, the latest builds of Chrome even work. That was actually kind of surprising when that worked. And let's see, trying to think of what else. What else is out there? I mean, that's pretty much it.
Firefox, IE, Safari,
Opera. Yeah. But Opera's
that's
such a small.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody's using it on Opera.
Yeah.
But there's even a Linux project to Moonlight that I believe Novell is building it, but Microsoft is supporting them. And that's porting Silverlight to Linux as well. I know they have Silverlight 1 fully supported already, and they're working on 2 right now.
But like on your benchmarks in Silverlight, have you seen any like one browser performs better? It's easier to test. Have you ever found any kind of incompatibilities or any weirdo things?
In the final release, I haven't really seen much along that way. No. In the betas, even up to the final release candidates, Firefox every now and then would have a couple weird issues, but they would be really odd, hard to track down types of things. But it looks like they've got most of that worked out now as well, because I haven't seen any issues in a while.
Well, like you remember the NBC Olympics, you know, we're online through there. And I would go and watch like a movie, and I was watching my CPU stuff, and I'd watch it through Firefox, and it was peaking like crazy. And then I'd go watch it in IE, and it would be a lot less resource intensive. Like, I couldn't work and code and program and do builds at the same time in Firefox if I was watching the Olympics, right? But if I was in IE, then it would seem to be a little, you know, better. So,
and I think Firefox's video performance has got better with the final release. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I believe it did, because there is now a known issue with video if you're using a particular mode of Silverlight. And when you put the Silverlight object on a page, you can put it in what's called windowless mode, which then lays it inside the DOM as opposed to laying on top of it. So when you do that, it allows you to do things like have your Silverlight app be transparent and be able to overlay like HTML divs on top of your Silverlight and stuff like that. But if you're in that windowless mode and play videos, you get some serious performance issues. So hopefully that'll be addressed sometime soon. But at the moment, if you want to overlay HTML and you want to play videos, it's not a real good story there.
So, John, I really appreciate you coming and talking to us. I know I know you're a big community guy and you like chatting with people and sitting down and talking. So coming in here, really, we really appreciate it. I mean, what's your take? I know in the beginning I got your take on CodeMesh, but what's your favorite part of CodeMesh this week?
By far, it's the just talking with everybody else. I mean, the people here, the collaboration with people, and I don't necessarily mean, you know, pair programming type collaboration. I mean, just and even different platforms, but just talking about the way we code, the craft of coding. You get that kind of conversation here when you don't necessarily get it at other conferences, because, I mean, the craft of programming is something that a Ruby guy and a Python guy and a Silverlight guy and a WCF guy or whatever can all sit down at the same table and have the same conversation, where, you know, at a code camp, either people don't care or you just, it's harder to find that level of conversation. So that's the community and cohesiveness of it here is just, I mean, it's amazing. Lack of sleep is a little hard to deal with, but it's worth it.
It is when certain people that I know, stay up till 5 a.m. So
who was doing that last night?
I didn't say last night, maybe the first two nights. Huh. So, but
you're not looking at me because it was not me. I know that.
Hey, so we always ask our guests what your favorite deep fried food is.
Oh yeah.
Oh, deep fried food.
Let's see if he gives us a new one.
No, probably won't. Trying to think. Well, I mean, this is actually probably one of the oldest, simplest, but who knows? It may not have been said. Just donuts. Just plain old glazed donuts.
That's a new one.
But it qualifies. Yeah. It's a deep fried food.
Yep. It's fried.
You know, my father and my family used to run a donut shop back in my little town in Ripley, Mississippi there years ago. Used to get up at like 3 in the morning and go cook donuts.
So, funny thing, I went to Michigan State. And
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. So, there was a place between where I lived for 1 year, between where I lived and the engineering building, that deep-fried bagels. They deep-fried cinnamon bagels, and then they would put them in sugar, and they were excellent.
Huh.
So
not healthy.
See, to me,
not healthy, but
that almost falls in the same category of a Monte Cristo to me. It's like, okay, take a club sandwich, batter it, fry it, and sprinkle sugar on top. I mean, I don't get that.
Well, John, we certainly appreciate you coming out to the show today. We appreciate you giving us some time for us.
I've had fun.
It was great to finally meet you face to face. We've known each other for a while.
I know. We keep seeing your Twitter avatar on there. And what's your Twitter handle for people?
Johnny Stock. But for everyone out there who calls me Johnny, it's really just John. Just there's this other John Stockton out there that people seem to know, and I don't know, he plays basketball or something.
I think I may have heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a dark haired guy, about 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, which is short for what he did, but still.
Really.
Yeah.
But he was really good though.
Yeah. So for some reason, you know, the name John Stockton is kind of hard to get anywhere. So
So you go with the Johnny.
Yeah, it works. Yeah.
Well, folks, that's another episode of Deep Fried Bites. Mr. Woody, I appreciate you coming on the show again.
Oh, man, I love doing this.
I know.
And I love meeting new people.
Isn't our job hard? It's tough.
It's real tough. Yeah, you're kind of a big deal, man.
No. All right, folks, we certainly appreciate it. As always, you can reach us online at comments@deepfriedbites.com. Send us an email for queries, questions, and posers. We also can be reached at twitter.com/deepfriedbites. And as always, keep those tea glasses full. And those axes sharp. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.